Welcome to Beamercast number 8. It is November 10th, 2009, and this week we have got all the news on the new M3 GTS. We've got a little bit of news on the 1 Series Super Sport and the 1 Series M. So, be right back. Okay, so it has been an extra week. We had an extra week in there. A lot going on right now, and we're getting back into it pretty strong. Obviously, BMW had a big week as well. Michael, we've got a new M3.
We do have a new M3, and they're not calling it a CSL. They're calling it a GTS.
So GTS. I mean, historically, I can't think of anything in the BMW range that had that nomenclature that acronym or whatever it even stands for. It seems to have come out of the blue, really.
Yeah, there was no indication that anything of the sort was coming, to be honest with you, with the GTS, considering, you know, the week before we had heard rumblings and grumblings that 5 Series one-off mm-hmm. CSL that they had made was a foreshadowing of what was to come in the M3. It's pretty close, but mm-hmm. they went with the GTS as the name.
So why GTS? Because, I mean, you have such history with the CSL name. You have a car that, in my mind, kind of follows along those lines, you know, sort of a track day special. It's lightened. I mean, my thought is that they want to say the CSL name for something truly, truly special. I don't think they're going to do, you know, a quote CSL version of this M3. And, I mean, they specifically said a couple of years ago that they weren't going to do it. Now, granted, lots changed since then. Kai Segler got involved in the M division. Obviously, they're sort of gung-ho right now about products. So that leads me to think that they could have pulled out the CSL name and conjured up all the memories of the E46 CSL and, of course, the 3.0 CSL from the 70s.
The only thing I can say is, and you note that since Dr. K has gotten involved and how he promised we were going to see things a lot faster, how fast things are really coming. But I think the reason why they didn't go with CSL or Coupe's Special Lightweight would be because they really didn't make all that mm-hmm. big changes. Like the carbon fiber roofs on the regular M3, right. You know, we already have, carbon reinforced plastic fenders and things like that. So really, I mean, they stripped out a seat, changed the center console, lightened the doors up a little bit on the inside.
Installed scaffolding inside, orange scaffolding. Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, I think the cool thing about this car, and I mean, we should talk about the statistics in a second, but I think the cool thing about this car, in my mind, is they did this quickly, and I think from an internal standpoint, cheaply. And I think that's okay. You know, basically, they did an M3, a track M3, without going to, you know, enormous amounts of difficulty in terms of, you know, engineering and, you know, new components and whatnot. They stripped it out. They added in a suspension that, you know, any person who's going to basically make their M3 into a track car probably would have put in there. I mean, it's essentially a system that it's sort of old school. I mean, it's a suspension that you can obviously change and it's got completely sort of infinitely variable settings, but it's all mechanical. I mean, there's no, you know, button to press to go from sport to comfort. I mean, this is old school. The wing in the back, you know, it's got a little Allen screw there, and you just loosen it up, and you change the angle, and boom, you got more downforce. I mean, this is sort of what you do when you're trying to make a car track worthy, and they have done it in a very old school way, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I think it's Albert, you know, Bierman coming to the rescue here. He's a project designer, I think, on this one, as well as the M5. He's a old school guy, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. and the big difference with this is the motor. I mean, that's the only thing I can see that realistically, you know, an enthusiast or somebody wanting to track their BMW and throwing a whole bunch of money at it really couldn't do. You know, they bored it out.
Well, okay, so then that's a great point. They bored it out. It's 4.3 liters, if I remember right.
4.4.
So it's 4.4, and it makes over 450 horsepower.
Yeah.
So we haven't, obviously we haven't gotten a specific number yet. I'm sure that they're actually working on that as we speak. But it's, a lot more than the 414 and the standard M3. And you're right. Like, that's the big, you know, sort of like aha moment in this car when you're looking at the specs. I mean, okay, now I get it. 450 plus, you've got less weight, plus you've got a roll cage from the factory. This is an awesome car. I mean, if you're going to go out and buy a GT3 Porsche, now suddenly you've got this M3 that you can consider.
Yeah, you can. I mean, price point wise, it's up there. We're not going to see it in the U.S. Of course, we wouldn't see it in the U.S. because no one's going to spend $100,000 on a 3 Series. So, you know, the rest of the world is going to get the advantage of seeing it, and I think we're going to see it in competition. You know, I'm hearing little tidbits here and there that this may be a reason for ALMS and some motor upgrades in that, but
so they would
kind of on the back burner.
Theoretically, up the size of the engine to 4.4 because of this car. Is that your thought?
Yeah, what I was hearing, yeah, early on when I was hearing about this M5 CSL and how they bored the motor and that this was also coming to the M3, was that this may be giving them a leg up, I guess you could say, into some motor performance stuff going on with ALMS, but now I've been kind of looking into the amount of numbers and things like that, and I don't think they're going to do the volume to make this a truly homologized project for ALMS, but I could be mistaken. You know, I don't know if there's a bunch of sheiks out somewhere buying hundreds of these things, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, I will say that it's a shame. I mean, I think, you know, just for starters, it's a shame that we're not seeing this in the United States, and obviously we've got a lot of listeners in the U.S. And you know, I think it's BMW's largest market still, even with the recession. If I'm correct, you know, there's obviously a lot of red tape when you have this small quantity and you want to go over to the U.S. But having a car like this on the road, or at least available in the United States, I think it brings something to the brand that's hard to measure. And I think it's a shame, and I think it's a missed opportunity.
It's an intangible. You know, it's a halo that's kind of out of reach now for the U.S. consumer. But it would hit that magic 100,000 price point where I think BMW really is trying to keep everything but, say, the ultra luxuries below that. I think even the next M5 fully loaded will probably come in on just under that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I do think it's a shame. I do hope that, you know, some of this, you know, does trickle down. I doubt it will, but I would love to see some of this trickle down to the E92, just the standard M3. I'd love to see those wheels, for instance, as an option. I'd love to see, you know, upgraded 6-pot front brakes. I mean, you know, this car has a lot of things on it that don't necessarily need to be unique to this car.
There's a couple things on the car that probably should have been standard on the regular M3, and it's almost like they had them designed and then they pulled them back at the last minute, brakes being one of them. Because that just seemed really like a quick, you know, quick fix. This thing was...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's got a 6-pot setup up front, and obviously the M division and BMW is known and has been known until the 1 Series, until the 135, for this swinging caliper design. And not having as you know, as many pistons in their caliper. And it's really strange. I mean, they're really the last. I mean, I could be off base, but I believe they're one of the last automakers to, you know, in the performance cars not to go that route. And the thought has always been, well, you know, it's less unsprung weight. You know, this caliper and the whole setup just weighs less when it's this design. But, you know, you think about it, you're putting much less force theoretically on the pads and thus the pads are squeezing the rotor with much less force, and there's much less, you know, braking area. I mean, there's all sorts of thought there, and I mean, I'm sure there's a great argument for both sides. But on the face of it, you're right. It seems like they should have had this from the get-go on the E90 generation M3.
Yeah, the other neat thing about this car is it comes standard with your fire extinguisher.
Well, and that's nice to see a BMW-approved fire extinguisher. I mean, it's really nice. One of the nice little touches in the inside is the amount of Alcantara. I mean, even on the armrest, which is pretty cool. I think that this car is absolutely special. And you know, looking at these photos, I do think that they should have just gone with the CSL name. You know, they should have gone with CSL name. I love the ink orange. It is awesome. They should have done a stripe package that went old school with the CSL sort of stripes from the 70s, and you know, just gone with it and just embraced that name.
After seeing that M5, you know, prototype project car, halo thing, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. I really thought that this would have some really neat striping to it as well, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I thought that was kind of going to be a foreshadowing thing. But yeah. Orange is the in color. And I was actually thinking it was going to be a matte orange, to be honest with you, because matte seems to be this new fad that's going to last about 2 weeks. And
oh, I hope not. I love the matte. Well, I like to see, I don't know if you've seen matte cars up close. The Lamborghini has a few matte colors that I've seen that are just phenomenal. Have not seen the new M6 with the matte in person yet, but I can say from my limited experience, I love it. Looks fantastic.
Yeah, I've sprayed a lot of paint in my day back when I was younger, and if your car came out matte, you did something wrong. That's the way right. I kind of. You know, it's you did something wrong, or it's wet sand and hasn't been buffed out yet.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing, but
yeah, and obviously the tuners have been on the matte bandwagon for a long time, but you know, these manufacturers, I mean, it takes them a little while to get caught up.
And that's a nice this product is a nice segue, I guess, into what's going to go on with the One Series, you know. Possibly.
Right. So that is really, really interesting. I mean, two things, really. We've got the current One Series that is going to be phased out. It looks like 2012 is the last year. 2013 is when the new One Series coupe is going to come into the market. Is that what you're hearing?
That's exactly what I've been hearing. So you're looking at a 2012, sometime during the year, release for a 2013 mm-hmm. model year car.
So you've got 2009 all the way to 2012 for this current generation One Series coupe. Now, not to confuse things even further, but the One Series hatchback, the new One Series hatchback, I believe is going to be introduced in 2011. So it's actually going to get out there a little earlier. It's going to be based on the new modular architecture in the F30 3 Series. And it's also going to spawn the next generation Mini, which is an entirely different podcast, which you can go get at MotorInfo. So you've got this really stepped, and BMW does this, obviously, the stepped introduction. So you've got this coupe right now that's going to be, quote-unquote, long in the tooth here in the next few years. And the thought is that BMW is going to come out. In fact, we've seen photos of this prototype with some sort of M product. We don't know what it's going to be called yet. We have some ideas. It's been known as the Supersport. It's been called, it's even been called a 1M. Regardless of what it is, what it's going to be called, we do see this prototype with 19-inch, surprisingly similar wheels to what we saw on the GTS M3. Huge fender flares, front and back. Looks very very, very menacing.
Yeah, it looks a lot like what they did with the E30 M3. Flares in the front, flares in the back.
Mm-hmm. And so that brings up a good point. About a year ago, there was a lot of talk about how, you know, the M division wanted to get back to the idea of that E30 M3. They had one pristine example at, you know, the M headquarters, and a few of the engineers had been driving it. And I can't remember which executive actually was on record saying that, you know, I drove it, and there's something very pure about the car, and I'm paraphrasing here, but there's something very pure, and, you know, it's very light, doesn't have a lot of horsepower, but doesn't really need it. And you have to wonder if we're going to see, you know, the fruits of that time and that thought in this next One Series product.
Yeah, it would be nice to see that, and I think that's what the M engineers are, you know, attempting to recreate. And I think if they're given the go-ahead, which, you know, they have no say in what they can produce, but they're building things to see what they can do. I think that if they're given the go-ahead, we will see something on this one chassis before it's, you know, end of life here.
I think it's fantastic. Again, I think Dr. Kai is probably, you know, sort of involved with that. And you know, you have to respect the fact that this guy has come on board and has so quickly changed, I wouldn't say the philosophy of M, but just changed the way they sort of go about creating products and the speed they create them with. Obviously, you know, we have the X5M, the X6M, and, you know, opinions are divided, obviously, on that product. So, you know, it looks like BMW is basically saying, okay, we know that we've done this. We know we've upset you. Now look at these two incredibly shiny, beautiful things, and go enjoy them. Look, we're still the M that you know.
It's a good point. They are still the M that, you know, we know. It's just, I think that there's so many markets that they have to tap into to become, you know, more profitable and part of the larger company. We're starting to see the, you know, suspension systems and things like that infiltrate regular models because they put so much R&D into these things that they actually have to get money back out of them.
Well, and they've done that in the past. I mean, that, you know, there was the with the E46, you could get the, you know, the M suspension on the 3 Series outside the U.S. In fact, the 135 sold in the U.S. has something called an M suspension, if I remember right, in the literature. But I always wondered, you know, how involved they really were with that. So, you know, whereas you have the Z4, which, you know, they very, very publicly sell that as the M suspension option.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's the other thing, too. It's I guess you want to say badge engineering, because the M Sport kit outside the U.S. includes what we in the U.S. for suspension would get standard as the sport suspension. Mm-hmm. So there is no difference between an M Sport suspension in the rest of the world versus what we used to just get in the standard sport suspension. That's here in the U.S. It was just the rest of the kit we never received, you know, the bumpers and basically the cosmetic upgrades.
Right, which is a shame, and I'm so, so glad that we finally have the option to get the M Sport package here. Because, I mean, at least for me, I mean, especially with the E46, but also with the E90 3 Series, it just looks fantastic with that M Aero kit.
It does. It's much more menacing. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a more substantial product, a little bit more masculine, I guess you could say.
So really quick, back to this 1 Series. So we've got the idea of a Super Sport coming out for the current generation 1 Series. I think it's the E87, if I remember right.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that's going to be what you call the Super Sport. That is going to be something, if it comes to fruition, will be actually an M product.
So do you think they're going to actually, for this generation 1 Series, do you think they're going to call it a 1M?
Yeah, it may be called the 1M. It's not going to be called an M1. That badge is going to be held for something else.
So
think of Z4M. They're going to call it one, you know, it could be 135M, it could be 1 something M, or it even could just be 1 GTS at this point.
Well, it's a similar project. It's very interesting because, you know, you've there's this very subtle difference now, and I don't think many people pick up on it, to be honest with you. So it sounds like we are going to be getting an M product for this current generation 1 Series. It's going to be available for, let's just say they get this thing out somehow in a year. And it debuts in late 2010 as a 2011. They're going to have this car on the road for 2 years, 2 years of sales.
You know, 2 years of sales.
So they're going to have to, whatever they put into it, they have to get out of it. I mean, that's a prerequisite for anything they do, obviously. So I would imagine that, based on that thought, you're going to look at an engine that's probably going to be an upgrade of the current twin turbo 3-liter. That is breathed on, I would imagine, rather lightly. They're probably not going to spend a ton of money. They're probably going to go with a wider track, as is noted in that article. Wider
right,
track, which, different suspension, a lot of components from the M3 that have already been developed.
I would imagine so, yeah.
And, of course, it's going to have a unique body kit, unique wheels, M emblems, and so forth. Does that sound right to you?
Sounds exactly right. I mean, think about how much development they're not going to have to put into that then. The M is, you know, and the nice thing about the 1 Series is it's a 3 Series scaled down. A lot of the architecture is the same, so it's plug and play in a lot of things. So they could, you know, hypothetically bolt up an M3 you know, rear axle, mm-hmm. rear end, rear diff, everything, you know.
But it doesn't make any sense to me to do anything other than that twin turbo inline six and just massage it a little bit. I mean, I can't see something else happening. I can't see that V8 obviously going in there.
No, it would throw the whole dynamics of the car off too, the V8. Mm-hmm. It would add way too much weight up in the nose.
Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, I would just assume it would be too big to put in there. So now you've got this incredible 1 Series. This is a car that I think a lot of people are clamoring for, this idea of an M1 Series, something that's small, nimble, relatively lightweight, M product, has the feel, everything of the M, that the M brand sort of delivers on. Where do you price it? You know, that was always the problem. And in fact, I asked a couple of folks from the Indivision, it was a year and a half ago now, almost 2 years, when the 135 was introduced to the U.S. market, this question, you know, would you do an M product, a 1 Series M product? I mean, their answer at the time was no, we can't, or we don't think we can, because we don't know how to price it. You know, you've got the 1 Series right now, a 135, relatively loaded, for low 40s, if not mid 40s. Then you've got the 335, in that range, a little bit higher. Then you've got the M3 starting out in the high 50s. So I'm based on all that, I can just assume that we're looking at something around 50.
I would imagine low 50s with minimal content outside of, the basic necessities, mm-hmm. I would imagine with that. And the other thing is if people in the U.S. want to see it, they should start asking their dealers for it now and start, you know, getting going, get some grassroots organization out there, because this is another product that we may not see if it's a small, low-quantity car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that would be a shame. I mean, you know, this is sounds fantastic, but there is another option. There is another 1 Series coming down the pipeline that we could see, or we may stand a better chance at seeing, and that is the F20. And we can only assume, if they're going to go to the trouble to make an M version out of this current generation 1 Series, that they will, from the start, consider an M version of this new 1 Series, the F20. And as we talked about, that F20 is going to debut in late 2012 as a 2013 model. I would assume that, you know, that would form the basis of one hell of an M car.
Yeah, and the thing moving forward now is that a lot of the products are being designed with M in mind. That's why we're actually seeing the M5 going through testing so soon. And we haven't even seen, you know, the 5 Series, which we will see in a couple of weeks. But mm-hmm. we haven't seen the new generation 5 Series, the F10, even come out. And we're already seeing prototypes of the M5 running around. It's because there's a lot more emphasis now on M's input into the cars from the get-go. So we're going to see a 1 Series coming forward, the F20 chassis. We're going to see an M, you know, a 1M from the mm-hmm. get-go with that car. You know, mm-hmm. a year after launch, 6 months after launch, it'll have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really excited. I mean, I personally am a big fan of the 1 Series, as I've mentioned before, and you can read the reviews that I've written personally on Motorfile, and you can probably tell that. A 1 Series M to me is really getting back to the roots of the brand, getting back to that E28 M5, getting back to that E30 M3, you know, creating a car that is nimble, lightweight, not overly complex, but delivers on, you know, that balance, that poise, that power that the M is really stands for.
Yeah, BMW had a cult following early on because the cars were light, nimble, quick, you know, and fun to drive. And as some of our readers like to point out, things have gotten bigger, heavier, and a little less involved. And they're aware of this, and they're trying their best. They have a lot of things to take into consideration when they produce a car, but they're drivers at heart, and they really want to get back to what they were doing.
Well, and I think from my perspective, having owned nothing but late model BMWs for the past 10 years, and then going out and getting this E28 535 IS, it's astonishing how many filters are removed in a car like that versus what you have today. And if you get behind an M3 versus a standard 335i, you start to sort of you know, whack away at those filters. The M3, the feel, everything is fantastic. Now, if you can just imagine that with 700 less, you know, pounds of weight, now you're starting to talk about a car that not only inspires people, but, you know, people lust after. I mean, the performance, the attitude, everything is just sort of amped up.
Sign me up for two.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, you know, we're in an era where you cannot create cars like they did back, you know, in the 80s or even the early 90s. You cannot create cars that weigh 2,800 pounds seat four and have a 500 horsepower engine and cost, you know, $70,000, $60,000. I mean, they just can't do it. Otherwise, they would be.
Yeah, and they can't spew emissions anymore either. So I think that's going to be another thing going forward. That's why we're going to have turbocharged everything.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be really interesting over the next few years. I mean, obviously this one series, the current generation one series, is the thing that we're going to see first, this end product. I would imagine that as far as one series end products go, I would imagine that we're going to see, as you said, that F20 based one series M shortly after the one series coupe debuts, the next generation. But as far as the next M product goes, after this GTS, obviously, and then we're going to be getting more information on that soon, this M5 is probably going to debut, I would imagine, what would you say, late next year?
We have a regular launch of the F10 5 series this spring. Probably either next spring at the latest, in all honesty.
Interesting. Well, M is getting very, very busy. And I think it's interesting to see them also play the media game themselves. I mean, they've got this site now with information on the GTS just out there for the public. You know, they're not necessarily relying on people to filter the information out in magazines and online. I mean, they want to actually publish this stuff themselves and interview executives themselves and sort of control it a little bit more, which I think is a great idea. And, you know, obviously it's great because it gets content out there and it gets videos out there for us to get excited about. And I think it's just another sign of a new era.
Yeah, and them releasing products to the public that were otherwise unknown is kind of interesting too, like the 5 Series convertible,
right,
that they were going to come out with there for a while and then pulled the plug at the last minute.
That's an interesting car, the E34 5 Series convertible. And we had seen a photo of this before, and this was known to exist. I don't think it was entirely sure. People were entirely sure that it was still around. There's always rumors that BMW has destroyed various interesting concept cars over the years. The most notable is the M8 prototype, which there are photos of, featured, I believe, a version of the V12 in the McLaren F1, and was just a radical, radical car. Anyway, that was probably the most well-known secret sort of M prototype that was destroyed. But this E34 M5 sort of came out of nowhere, like you said, and I mean, they are presenting it and being very open about it now.
That they are, and you know, that's part of that media blitz that they did. So I hopefully, you know, next time we see another one, maybe we're going to get something else that we didn't think existed. You know, that'd be pretty cool.
I'd love to see an E90 M3 wagon.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Or I guess it's the E90. Is it the E93? The wagon.
Oh, E91. Yeah, E91. Yeah, E91 wagon would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Well, actually, and not to get off too much on a tangent, but sales of your car, of the M3 four-door, which, by the way, I hope to make my car someday in the next couple of years, that car has not sold well.
It's abysmal.
And I would imagine, based on that, that we may not see a four-door M3 for a very, very long time.
I'm hearing that they may stop making it, actually.
Really? Just flat-out stop making it?
Yeah, because it's not cost-effective.
That's interesting. You've got people, specifically auto writers, who just adore that car. I mean, you know, you listen to Jeremy Clarkson even on Top Gear, you know, just saying, why would you get the two door M3 when you could get the four door? You know, it just doesn't.
I don't know myself, and the weight difference isn't all that much, and you actually get some more room and a couple of extra doors.
Yeah. Well, I, a lot of times with these cars, and I know that you know this. comes down to sort of this look and perceived sort of attitude, if you will, for lack of a better term. You know, you're sort of a lot of times buying this card as a badge, unfortunately, very unfortunately. And that two-door coupe, you know, theoretically says something about you. I just think it says you didn't get the four-door.
I think you're right. Or you have no friends that want to sit in the back.
But. Right. Now, granted, it's a beautiful car. I love the two-door M3, and if I was in the market for a coupe, that would certainly be top of the list. But, yeah, the four-door is just gorgeous. That's a shame. So, I mean, I would be absolutely saddened if they stopped making that four-door. I mean, I will have to scour the used car lots in the next couple of years if I want to get one then.
Well, I'll tell you what, if they stop making it, mine's going to get parked and driven on weekends solely, so I have it for the next 25 years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you talk about classic M cars and rare cars, and I mean, I truly believe it's going to be quite a rare M3.
And mine's an 08, and, you know, so it didn't have the rear facelift.
That's
old
true.
I drive.
Sure, you got the old I drive too, though. That's the thing. I mean, and I will say it's kind of funny, but I think about, you know, in a few years, I mean, I'd love to get a four-door M3 or an M5, you know, used, a few years old. And my thought in my head is always, well, it has to be an 09 because I have to have the latest generation I drive.
That's right.
I mean, there's such a huge difference, and I don't know, it sounds stupid, but.
There is. I
have a choice.
There is. I actually, you know, readers of the site will know, I just finished up the review on the 750Li, which has the latest and greatest edition of iDrive. And it's a night and day difference between, to go back to the previous generation after driving that for a week was...
That's unbelievable.
It was a learning curve, actually.
It's interesting. My system, my navigation system in my E46, my 2004 E46 3 Series ZHP, I think has more in common with your 2008 iDrive than the 2008 iDrive has with the 2009 iDrive. I think that there's that much of a difference between 2008 and 2009 models.
Oh, I would definitely agree. I mean, the iDrive, the one I have, the 08, you know, edition is great. It, mm-hmm. it does what it's got to do, and everything's in its place. Sure, it requires a little bit of learning and understanding mm-hmm. the system, but once you get into that new generation or, you know, the fifth generation, It's amazing.
The same logic that I had to use to learn the system in my car, which is a non-iDrive navigation. It was the last one they made before they switched over to iDrive, is the same logic that you have to know to operate your iDrive, the 2008 version of iDrive, or any iDrive up until that point. You know, it's sort of knowing that to click and then to spin backwards and things like that. Now,
right.
the new iDrive is so drastically different and reinvented. And so much easier to use that sort of logic that you used to sort of get around in those previous systems, you don't need anymore.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the only gripe I had the whole time with the 7 Series was that, you know, it's a little noisy, wind noise. And my big thing was there's so many lights in the thing. And even if you turn them down at night, it's still really bright.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's one thing that I've always found in all iDrive is that it's all iDrive equipped BMWs. The auto dimmer does not either. It doesn't work at all, or it works so little that you can't even tell it's working. So we have got a big couple weeks ahead of us. Obviously, we have the LA show, and we expect to see that 5 Series debut. On the web.
23rd or 24th of November, we'll see marketing pictures of those.
And so that is in 2 weeks. Shortly thereafter, you're going to actually see the real thing in LA, and then in Detroit, of course. And then Detroit is going to be interesting. Haven't heard really what we're going to see there from the BMW side. We know that Mini has pushed back their Countryman debut. However, we may see a Mini concept in Detroit. I have a feeling we will. As far as BMW goes, though, are we just going to see the Vision concept move over to the other side of the pond and, you know, rolling out the 5 Series in Detroit?
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're going to see if the, you know, when the 5 Series is going to come. I think it's going to come in, you know, a little bit later. But the big thing to note is that we've seen the X3 kind of stepped back a little bit. We haven't seen very many spy shots of the X3. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been doing its undressing routine that they normally do. So they're still in the evaluation phase on those, and I'm not sure when we're looking to see those. And you know, they've been hiring down there in South Carolina at the plant. They've started the hiring process to get the employees ready to produce the car. So they've been making headway that way.
It's interesting because, I mean, MINI is essentially waiting for BMW's production on the X3 to wrap so they can start producing the Countryman. So that sort of delayed the Countryman a little bit. It's also subsequently delayed, this is a little off topic, but delayed ProDrive in creating the new Countryman WRC entry, which is a topic we'll have to get to at some other point when that actually gets announced. But it's funny how these things sort of ripple across a couple different cars and cause issues for a lot of different people.
Right, and the other thing that was interesting to see is that we actually caught a glimpse on a spy photo of the next generation 3 Series already.
Right, and that's one thing we should certainly mention. I mean, we are a few years away, but I think it seems like that car is pretty well put together at this point.
2012, we'll see that in the spring, and it should be put together fairly well. It's using the same chassis, you know, underpinnings and, you know, electronics as the next generation X3 will. The next generation X3 will actually be the first product to use that next generation technology, as it were.
And we talked about that. This X3 is essentially skipping a generation. They went from the E46 derived, and that's the not the current 3 Series, but the previous 3 Series, E46 derived electronics and chassis and everything to the next generation 3 Series. So and that blew my mind, actually. But it makes a lot of sense, though. I'm sure it's much more cost effective than the current generation.
Yeah, and that's where we end up with the X1. So everything, you know, is going in its course, and they're getting the most per vehicle, I guess you can say they are.
Well, theoretically, it all will pay off for the.
It'll all pay off in the end. Yeah. So we're hearing.
Well, that 3 Series, it's obviously extremely early, very difficult to tell anything. But you know, like I said, it has more shape to it at this point than you'd imagine. And I know I'm reading too much into this, but that angle, I hope I'm not seeing more overhang than there currently is.
I think that's they're clad. It's overcladded, so it's actually got sheet metal snapped on to sheet metal, and then they put on the white, you know, paisleys.
Yeah.
But the thing I noticed with it is if you look at the greenhouse, it doesn't look overly huge compared to the current generation. So it didn't grow massively.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, that's something that seems to be pretty obvious as well. I mean, just looking at it now, it's always difficult to judge when you're not seeing it next to something that you know. But you're right, it does look about the same size as the E90.
So that's a good step, at least hopefully, if that's on par. So we're not going to be dealing with a 3 Series that's the size of the last generation 5 Series, which is the previous generation 7 Series.
It's just a different sausages at increasingly different larger lengths.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, that's the scariest part. I'm looking at this new 5 Series we're going to see in a couple of weeks, these spy shots and how it's doing its undressing. And we're down to, you know, paisleys here, paisleys there. But at the same time, it looks kind of bland to me, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's not looking as muscular as I originally had hoped.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that, too. The last few shots have whittled away some front end that is a little safe, I think.
Safe. Just like the 7 was safe, I actually think the 5 is going to be safer, if that is even a word. But well, it just looks overly safe to me.
And I think you're looking at, you know, the reaction. And of course, in automotive terms, this is a lightning, you know, a light speed change. I mean, they have reacted to the E60.
Which was awesome.
Which was awesome. But they reacted to people not liking the front end and the back end, because it was a bold statement, and I think it was very avant-garde, and it was gorgeous, and I love the E60. But people, if they don't see something that they know, I mean, this is, you know, obviously that they're going to react, and initially it's almost always negative, always. And of course, see the previous generation 7 Series for that. So what has happened is BMW has reacted in automotive terms very quickly, meaning it took them 7 years to get through the generation, and now they've created a new car. That was, of course, penned probably 4 or 5 years ago, sort of during the epicenter of the criticism. And now you're starting to see the fruits of the labor of that, and now it's going to be very, like you said, vanilla.
Yeah, it's, you know, and everyone's going to say that the past car was designed by Bengel and this one is not designed by Bengel. But guess what? He was there for both of them.
Right, right. Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. And nothing was truly designed by Bengel. So.
Right. He just happened to oversee a department of people designing things.
Yeah. No, it's a very good point. So, and you are absolutely right. I guarantee you we're going to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping, you know, that maybe we'll see the next 3 Series be a little bit bolder, more CS looking, kind of take some of that design language. I'm not into this bland Lexus look kind of thing. You know, Lexus never takes anything daring and kind of is always in the happy medium. And
well, I do agree. I do like the new 7 Series. I will say this, a little off topic, but the latest LS is actually not a bad looking car. It's probably the first Lexus I've ever seen that I actually don't.
I actually don't think I've looked at that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, it's been around for a few years. You probably haven't even noticed it. But it's just, it's one of those sort of, the more you look at it, the more it's sort of like, oh, it's kind of a handsome car. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, I think, you know, BMWs had a certain look, a certain feel in the 80s. They had a certain feel in the 90s. It was never avant-garde. Chris Bangle and his team created something that I think will, in the coming years, I think people will start to realize how forward-thinking they were. And, I mean, clearly we're seeing that. And not to turn this into a design discussion, because that's a completely different show, a different topic. But
that's a different podcast.
Yeah, well, it could be this podcast, too, which is not tonight. But, you know, I think that, in my mind, they were extraordinarily successful in what they tried to do. And at the same time, you know, they, part of that success and part of making a bold statement is having a certain number of people not like it. I mean, that's just, any time there's a bold statement, you can't have everybody like that, like the bold statement. So, you know, what has happened is, you know, BMW is under increasing pressure to make money every quarter, and inevitably, you know, that comes down to making designs more palatable.
It's true. It's true. I mean, I was just thinking with when they launched that new Z4, how daring and bold and beautiful that was. The 7 Series, I think, is beautiful as well in its own right. It's just a little less car. You know, it's a little less bold. And then just seeing the 5 right now with its cladding on and, you know, still wearing the Paisleys, it's less bold than the 7 is. Mm-hmm. But it could all change when they pop those lights off and we actually get to see it.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, we will see it very, very soon. But until then, I think we should probably wrap this one up. But you know, the M division sort of got their news out, and I feel like we're gonna have a little bit of space now, a couple of weeks where BMW is going to be gearing up for what's next. And of course, that's the 5 Series. So we will be back to cover that in all of its glory over the
Absolutely.
Next few weeks.
We got 5 Series GT coming up next podcast, and then. Sure, 5 Series after that.
Great. And I'm actually going to write a review, a very energetic, I'm sure, review of my 1988 535 IS, which has been a joy to live with over the past month. It's going to be kind of a little bit different than what we normally do. And one of the things we've always tried to do at Bimmerfile is not only give you the latest information around the new BMWs, but also talk about the history, talk about, you know, these old cars, and actually not just talk about them, but drive them. So look for that in coming days.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to that.
All right, cool. Well, until then, cheers.
Prost.